Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion, and this is my co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. Now, Bill, I think you're going to need to share with the audience why you look like you've been out lumberjacking this morning.
And first of all, I'm under the weather. I started feeling a bit of a head cold coming on a couple nights ago.
I told him no kissing with tongue today.
And for the last 2 weeks, I've been moving from Residence A to Residence B. And today was started off very early. Yesterday was three loads in the truck to get all the last stuff done. And really now it's heavy equipment time, and I am absolutely whipped. And fall arrived today,
yes.
Officially, it seems.
Abundantly.
There was a week and a half of just rainy season, and then fall really hit today.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling all that great. I was at the dump shoveling a bunch of crap out of my utility trailer not long ago. I probably still have it in my hair.
Yeah, something just flipped out while you did that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I made it to lunch 15 minutes late. We talked about absolutely nothing to do with the show before we got here. I mean, we are as totally unprepared as we've ever been. There you have it. But I am not at my prime today. I'm even wearing my crappy watch, my beat-up old BDUs, my Disneyland long sleeve. Because as soon as the show is done, I'm straight back at it.
Back to work now. We didn't catch up on a lot of personal stuff, though.
Yeah. We talked about some fun stuff. So.
The hell with you guys. We talked personal
stuff.
Yeah, that whole professionalism thing, which we're going to get into later. My rant, professionalism.
Okay. Exhibit A.
All right. Interesting couple of stories come out. Dealing with telephones, cell phones,
okay,
and encryption.
Okay.
The first story, the one that I think is the most fascinating, is that I forget whether it's the DEA or the FBI, they have possession of some guy's iPhone, and they want into it. Okay. They went to court to have the court compel Apple to break into this guy's phone. Now, that's no big deal. I mean, the government's been trying to pressure these companies into providing them with like slave technology. We order you to be our slaves and do our bidding since we can't do it ourselves. But here's the interesting part. In Apple's sworn statement in response to the government's proposition, Apple said, if you have an iPhone and it's running iOS 8 or better, no one can get into the data on the phone if it's password protected, including Apple. Okay? That they went from the three digit to the four digit security, which of course exponentially increases the number of possibilities, and it's got 256-bit encryption behind it. And Apple said to the government, sorry, we intentionally, because of the Snowden revelations, we intentionally built these phones so the only person who can get the data off of them is the person whose phone they belong to and who knows the password.
That might actually compel me to move from an Android system into an iPhone system.
A lot of people have made that observation.
Really, the one thing that has kept me from doing it overall has been that there's no removable battery in the iPhone.
That's true.
I always have at least two batteries on my phone. I never seem to need two, but I take it when I travel. I remember I was in D.C., and I forgot to take my extra battery, which was really tough because we're out around D.C. for 12, 13 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, like, totally limited use. I couldn't take very many pictures. I couldn't even send too many text messages. Could hardly make two or three phone calls in a day because my battery would die. And, of course, now the battery is a little bit bigger. It's a couple years back. But that's been the one hitch with me. I shouldn't say the one hitch. Probably the major hitch with me not getting an iPhone.
You know,
but understand that better technology is better now than it was even a couple years ago, last time I upgraded.
And improving all the time. My thing is, I have a charger everywhere. When I'm sitting at my desk, there's a charger. When I put the phone away at night, it's on a charger. When I'm in my car, there's a charger. So I've sort of got away from I've got away from the paradigm of relying on battery life. I think your situation you had when you were in D.C., for me, having to go around all day, such a rare occurrence, I wouldn't choose my phone on that.
It's a regular travel occurrence with me.
Right,
when
okay.
I travel, I got my phone, and if I don't, if I'm not in a vehicle, you know, if I fly somewhere, I didn't rent a car, whatever it might be.
Right.
That's when it becomes an issue, which isn't very often. And I actually bought one of these little things off of Groupon. In fact, it's a little, it's a small flashlight that's also a charger. It holds. A charge so you could re-plug your phone in.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Got a USB on one end, and it's got a little LED light, so it's multifunction there. Plug it in to charge your phone. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that could always go in the pocket, too, with a small cable.
There's even some cool stuff that I've seen. I don't own any of it because it's not... I don't have an application for it. But, for instance, they have a little roll-up mat that you unfurl it.
Yeah, and it lays
and
on there.
Solar. No, for, like if you're outdoors, let's say you're up in Utah hiking... And you've been taking some photographs and sending them to whoever and so forth. You can, if you're going to stop and have lunch, you can unfurl this. It's solar panels, and you plug your phone in, and it charges your phone while you're sitting there having
That's
lunch,
cool.
right? Yeah, because there's all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, I actually recently downloaded an app on my phone, which is a walkie-talkie, and I can.
I get the word porn. What's the other word?
And not porn.
Oh,
I'm
sorry. Wrong app.
Name
okay.
on it. So I can actually push this and try to get a hold of my girlfriend on there. Anyhow, I hope she doesn't respond because we're on the air. But
the other great story, NSA just held a big conference with all of the tech giants. And, you know, there's a new director of NSA, Admiral, I forget his last name now. But
Admiral bought and paid for.
Obviously, they all are. Okay. And... I think the reason they needed a new one was the last few lied so blatantly, so often to the American people that they had to go.
Zero credibility.
Yeah, when somebody gets up and lies, like, you know what the cycle, you remember the cycle. I forget that particular guy's name who was the admiral or general in charge of NSA at that time. He would get up and say, "We are absolutely not doing this." And then the next week, another Snowden document would get revealed to show that he was lying. And he did that so many times, he was gone. And he's been given a huge multi-billion-dollar public project where he's going to get filthy rich to pay back for his lying to the American people in his retirement. But anyway, so this new guy, and he's taking a very non-confrontational perspective. This distrust thing really isn't working for us. We have to secure the interests of the United States. That's the important thing. We shouldn't be angry at you. You shouldn't be angry at us. It's a spirit of reconciliation, right? But, of course, that doesn't change the ultimate truth that the U.S. government wants to see all your stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay. So they're talking to all the major players from the cell phone manufacturers and cell phone carriers and landline carriers and people who make more sophisticated transmission equipment. And this is a big conference to find out. Basically, I mean, they're not publicizing it as such, but basically, how do we get into your stuff? Okay. And this admiral that's now in charge of the NSA, he says, what we need to do is there needs to be compromise. In other words, what he's saying is, perhaps we don't get everything we want, but perhaps you give us stuff you'd maybe rather not. Okay. And Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, he says, no. You know, whatever people think of Apple, the product, the company, Tim Cook personally, on this subject, on security, he has really been in our corner being the American people. And to the Admiral's statement about compromise, he said no. He said that's not the option. He said the option is to find a way for you to find a way to get the information you need to protect America without compromising the privacy of the American public.
Hear ye.
Right on.
Absolutely hear ye. And tell me, did anybody else stand up at this conference and mimic those same words? I would certainly hope they all did, and then start singing, na, 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 hey,
actually,
on the way out the door.
Tim Cook was not present at the conference, of course, neither was...
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Neither was, what's his name, the guy who's in charge of Google? Fritz Schmitz, whatever.
Yeah, Fritz Schmitz.
Yeah. None of them were at the conference, but when the representatives from Apple came back and told Tim Cook, that was his public statement in return. He issued a public statement on that. He said, now, compromise is not how it's done. We protect the privacy of the people who use our instruments, and it's up to the United States government, it's up to the NSA, it's up to the FBI counterintelligence unit, it's up to all of those guys to figure out a way to get the information they say they need, which is, it's all nonsense. It's a power play. It's not about terrorism. To get the information they need to keep the country safe. And that does not mean getting into the phones of all the people who use our products.
What do they need my phone for to keep the country safe? Right. You know, the thing that's interesting, you mentioned Google. It seems like whenever the federal government comes knocking on the door, they turn right around and grab their ankles. What can we do for you, sir? Yeah.
Google, interestingly enough, they do this about the privacy rights of their customers.
But they do this to the government.
Correct. Yeah. They give the government anything the government wants. But let's say they definitely are, unlike Apple, Google is saying, if we can work with you quietly, behind the scenes, give you what you say you need, and then we become the favored child of the government, we get favors in return.
I'm surprised they don't just say, look, I tell you what. Why don't we just hire some of your people to have access to all these various areas, all the areas you want to have access to, and we'll just let them work the night shift by themselves. And we don't care if they take stuff out or not.
You know, that's actually been part of the discussion about whether U.S. personnel should actually have an active role in, like, the security departments. Like, okay, let's say Google's looking at their Android security. So they've got a team of 150 engineers working on security. But then they're going to have two, like a guy from the FBI and NSA working on that team to make sure the government... No! No!
Yeah, forget about that Constitution thing. Forget about privacy. It's all a bunch of hooey.
Yeah, but
it's not private unless we approve it.
Yeah. And, you know, when this whole Snowden thing jumped off, I don't think anybody could have predicted which way, which companies were going to go. I've always liked the Apple product just because, for whatever reason, it appeals to me. I know other people don't like it. Some people are very big Android fans, Samsung, and so forth. So being that I was already drinking the Apple Kool-Aid, I have been...
Was it Apple flavor?
Yeah. I have been gratified that the equipment that I own, the iPad, the iPhone, I have a Mac at home and so forth. I'm gratified that the direction I've gone, the guy who's heading up that enterprise has a heartfelt, sincere interest in protecting my privacy.
I know they're making the iPhones bigger. Are they making the iPads into a maxi size?
They've got one coming out in just a couple months.
The iMaxi pad?
That is bigger than the standard and much bigger than the mini pad.
Enjoy that. We'll be right back.
We're back, and now it's time for... What is up with people clinging to the antiquated notion that there is something unprofessional about tattoos or even the use of profanity? Now, this is not an earth-shattering. You know, oftentimes when I do my rant, I consider it's pretty weighty stuff. This is less so. But nevertheless, it's irksome. And why is it irksome? Well, because I have one and I do the other. I've talked 2 weeks in a row now about that angry truck rant that I did after the Umpqua College, Oregon mass shooting. And it's up to 1.6 million people have seen it now. And I did a follow-up to that. By the way, I think I cautioned the audience last time that the angry truck rant is basically a progression of profanity. And it was intended that way. It was structured that way with intent. It wasn't loose cannon stuff. And 1.6 million views, and it's basically laced from front to back with profanity. I did a follow-up that probably has, I don't know, one or it's 11 minutes long and has maybe one or two words that people would consider curse words. And that, I think, is 28,000 views in comparison to the one that was an endless stream of profanity. That's 1.6 million. Now, numbers do not indicate whether something is right or wrong, correct or not. But some of the comments were that how unprofessional to use profanity, how unprofessional this guy appears with all these tattoos. So these were some of the comments that I got. Now, I'm going to get into in a moment why I consider that an asinine, both of them to be asinine statements, and of a construct that should have been dead and gone long ago, but people are anally retentive and they can't let go of their past prejudices, so it continues on. But I've talked about this thing, judgmentalism, before. Most poignantly, I spoke about it in the very last edition of the Dave Champion Show, where I wanted people to understand what I thought was perhaps the thing that the American public does, which is most disadvantageous to liberty and does the most, is most destructive between how we treat one another. The point is, I've long held this view, and I articulated it on the last show of the Dave Champion Show as the last message I wanted people, the message I wanted people to get on that last show was how important it is not to do these things. So, Noah, let's go ahead and let them see that little clip.
Judgmentalism, bigotry, and hatred, they are the three executioners of liberty. And you can stop the execution. To show self-discipline, to stop yourself from engaging in judgmentalism and bigotry and hatred, is to love and support liberty. Let me read that again. To show self-discipline, to stop yourself from engaging in judgmentalism, bigotry, and hatred, is to love and support liberty.
So, who is it that says that tattoos are unprofessional in the workplace, or that profanity, the use of profanity, makes somebody unprofessional? Normally, it's tied to somebody's personal moral construct. Now, I'm going to get to where people are way off base on this morality thing in a moment. But normally, people who believe that it's that profanity is bad or wrong, where did they get that? They got that from their moms and dads, who probably got that from their moms and dads. Let's talk about morality for a moment. People oftentimes think that morality is a thing. It's like an iPhone. It simply is. And the construct that that morality simply is what's in their head. But they assume, Americans assume, that whatever they think is so is a universal truth, which is absurd. Morality is not a singular thing. Morality is a descriptor that defines how somebody, each individual defines what is right, wrong, proper, improper, and so forth. For instance, I might have a particular morality. That would be the aggregate of all the various things that constitute my view of moral conduct. We call that morality. I have my morality. Bill has his morality. You have your morality. And guess what? They're not all the same. Now, there are certain things which for 99.99999% of us are the same, such as you don't murder. That's part of a moral code. And we all agree on that. But there are things that we have incredibly divergent opinions on, and somebody says, well, that's immoral. No, it's not. Or I'll say that's immoral, and somebody else will say, no, Dave, that's not immoral. So there is no thing called morality. Morality is a very flexible term. And of course, people, most notably people who are religious, they talk about, you know, oh, there's a certain section of the population that wants us to practice moral relativism. There's no set right and wrong. It's moral relativism. And that's wrong. You know, really all those people are saying is that guy there, that guy there, that guy there, they want to deviate from my morals. So it's called moral relativism, right? And it's no such thing. Morals are in their very nature fluid and flexible. Hell, they're fluid and flexible in the same person throughout their lifetime. What I consider morals for me, I hold a different set of values in that regard today than I did 20 years ago. So morals are constantly in their very nature flexible. So this whole thing we talk about where, you know, it's moral, it's immoral is it's a matter of personal choice. The only reason religious people say that there's only one morality is because they like it that way. Let me tell you an interesting story about professionalism. I have an acquaintance of mine, lives back east, and I know him from his firearms training environment, and he is a civil engineer, and he's white, and he's he went to a good school. He has a job as a civil engineer. When he goes to work each day, he wears beautiful, expensive shirts and beautiful slacks, and he walks around in an environment that's very beautiful and upscale, and, you know, virtually everybody who works there is white, and of course, he doesn't have a tattoo on his body. And he said to me, he actually said to me, tattoos are unprofessional in the professional environment. Okay, so this guy's family had some bucks. They sent him to a nice school. He's got a great job. And he still says incredibly stupid things. And I actually proved that to him, because while he was going on and on about there's just no place for people with visible tattoos in the civil engineering field, I'm sure people who are watching this who are civil engineers with tattoos want to beat him up. But I said to him, so help me out with this. If you went out tonight and got a big piece on your forearm tonight and came back to work tomorrow, how much less professional of a civil engineer would you be? On a scale of 1 to 100, how much less would you be tomorrow? Well, I wouldn't be. Okay? And it was simply a personal bias. I don't have them, and I consider myself professional. And I don't want to be like you other people. Hence the clip you just watched about judgmentalism. On the side of profanity, oh, by the way, I also want to add concerning police departments. You know, it's funny because a lot of police executives, oh, well, you can't have visible tattoos because police officers have to look professional. Really, while they're beating a homeless man to death for 9 minutes in California, but it's good because they didn't have any tattoos, they're professional. Jurisdictions where the law enforcement agency has no restrictions on tattoos. I think it's actually San Bernardino City now is hiring people with neck and hand tattoos, right? It's all about doing the job. It's not about visual appearance, but places where they have no restrictions and the officers have visible tattoos. Do you know how many complaints they get from the public about their officers looking unprofessional? How do I know? I called them and I asked. When I did an article on tattoo discrimination many, many months ago, I called the agencies and I asked. I said, how many complaints do you get? None. So it's absolute nonsense. Profanity. Your mommy told you don't say that word. That's all it is. And here's an example. If I'm somebody's superior, I'm talking to a subordinate in a work environment, and I say, well, how did this end up this way? And they say, you know, they give me some explanation which does not hold water at all. And I say, well, golly gee whiz, Bob, that explanation was a bunch of nonsense. Or I say, Bob, that's bullshit. It's the exact same message. Neither one is professional. Neither one is unprofessional. It simply is. It's funny because words that I won't say because I don't want Noah to have to go do a bunch of work editing things out, they're highly descriptive, okay? I consider them to be powerful adjectives. Actually, some of these words are verbs, nouns, adverbs. They fill all the gaps. And sometimes they're exactly the right flavor, they're exactly the right salt that that particular substance needs to receive for the message to go out clearly. Then there's the issue of superiority, which I really think is what this all distills down to. When somebody says tattoos are not professional in the workplace, you know who says that? People who don't have them. Or people who have the little one way up here that they cover all the time and nobody knows, nobody in the workplace knows they have. Those are the people who say it's unprofessional. People who have visible tattoos and they're doing a fantastic, highly professional job in the workplace, would never say such a thing. Now, am I saying the tattoos make a professional? Of course not. Lack of tattoos doesn't make a professional. What makes a professional is demeanor and ability. Those two things, skill, ability, demeanor, those are the and experience, those are the things that make or break a professional. But there's a certain kind of person who wishes themselves to be elevated. So they say, you use profanity. That's unprofessional. What they're really saying is not you're unprofessional. What they're really saying is, I'm above you. I'm better than you. You have tattoos. That is not a professional image in the workplace, said by people who don't have visible tattoos. What they're really saying is, I appear professional. You don't. It's a way of that smallness, that pettiness that is all too common in our society, from causing them to want this need. The need is the part that kills me. The need, the apparent need to elevate themselves above others who are really no different than they are. And we'll be back.
Welcome back. Now it's time for me to rant. You know what really grinds my gears? The abuse of words or alleged words. I'll give you a perfect example. Everybody knows when somebody says, quote, the F word. Well, we know that, or the F bomb. But when we start giving all these other words, the N word, pretty familiar with that. There's an S word, a T word, a W word. Somebody I know, their kid actually said the R word. And I'm running it through my head. What could R possibly stand for? What is the R word? Wait, is there an A through Z word? Is there a W word? Is there an X word? I don't know. I don't know what all these are. I need to have a little definition on my phone or something. The R word. Retard. That was the R word. Really? You can't say retard or retard. Retard would usually how you would describe someone who was slow. Retard would be to slow down or that something is slower. That's what retarded means. It means slowed down. Oh, we can't refer to people as retarded. So does that mean that the word retard, like, hey, we need to retard our pace on this project? You can't use that anymore. You have to say slow. You have to come up with a different word now. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of all of this PC-related garbage. It's destroying our country. If we cannot get our message across, I don't really care if somebody's offended. There is no right to not be offended. Okay? First Amendment, you have a right to freedom of speech. You are guaranteed to be offended multiple times in your life with the First Amendment. If you're very sensitive and you think that no one should ever be offended, you can guarantee that there will be no freedom of speech because everything has to be watered down so much to fulfill your delicate sensibilities. I'm not here to fulfill anybody's delicate sensibilities. I'm not. If I have something to say, I want to get it out there as effectively as possible. And if that means watering it down to a message that I have to think about every certain word going into a phrase, into a sentence, into an entire debate argument that has to be so cleaned up in PC that I can't even get the message across. You know, that's why Donald Trump is leading the Republican polls right now. He doesn't play that game. He's speaking to the American people the way that the American people speak amongst ourselves. Because he's not a polished politician. He just doesn't go through all of that PC garbage. A lot of the others do. And on the rare occasion where they step off of the PC platform, they're lambasted in the liberal media. And they're taken to task by the Democrats. Now, you can get Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or any of those to fall off the wagon all the time with their politically correct speech, making it incorrect, and free pass. But a lot of Republicans, oh, you can't do that because you're considered too hard-edged. Ridiculousness. Absolute ridiculousness. Dave, I got to tell you, it's been coming on more and more the last few years when we thought it was going to slow down, it was going to retard this PC. But it seems as though it's just expanded back up, and I think it's in light of this presidential campaign season.
It might be. It seems that there is a desire, as I look at people's posts, just not to offend. It's funny because they'll make a point. The macro theme of their post will be highly provocative and potentially offensive to people. But then they'll, like, instead of, like, the word F-U-C-K, in there they'll say F asterisk asterisk K.
Right.
Okay. So you're saying something very controversial and potentially offensive to a lot of people, but you don't want to offend somebody by using profanity.
So you're not spelling it out.
You're not, right,
but we know
right.
what it is.
Exactly. I saw somebody post something the other day, I think it was on the concerning the passing of Irwin Schiff. And the person wanted to, you know, say he's with God or whatever, and he wrote G-D.
I saw that same post.
Right. And
my response is, what is that?
I saw
what
that.
Is that?
Yeah. And there was an explanation about what it is, which is ridiculous. But the point being that people are focused on, in my opinion, trivialities. So it sort of goes back to my rant.
Absolutely right.
Focused
Perfect.
On trivialities while ignoring the big thing, the macro themes, the big issues. You pointed out about Donald Trump. I don't necessarily agree with his positions, but he is unrepentant, and he doesn't care what other people think of what he has to say.
Repentant was the R word.
Yeah, but as long as they push Trump during the
primary,
thank you. As long as they push Trump, beyond that, he doesn't care what they think. And as you pointed out, that's very appealing to people. Why people are so hung up on these trivialities, you can't say, you know, I see all the time, you do too, written out the N-word, okay? I've said it on my show. I've said it on this show. We did a whole segment on it. All right. And the thing is, maybe it's my circle of friends, both real friends in real life in the Facebook community and so forth. When I use profanity and I use a phrase, a word that people think is, nobody says anything. Now, that truck rant was an exception because Facebook promoted that on its own as a trending item. So it was seen by people, obviously 1.6 million people is far outside my normal group of people I would associate with. And I got some negative feedback, as I discussed, from that. But people know not to play that with me, and I'm sure they know not to play that with you. So what does that say? It's almost as if you have to be the kind of person that they can affect. Bill, you don't say that. Now, there might be somebody who would go, I'm sorry, I won't do that again. Where you and I would tell them, go pound sand.
I see it as people that focus in on the words and not the message.
Correct.
Which is, it's like concentrating on the peas and forgetting about the steak.
Right.
No offense to the vegans.
I've got to tell you, I think you're familiar with this. When you and I were going to do this segment where we used the word nigger,
mm-hmm.
I went to the owner of the station out of respect. This is his station. And he's concerned about what his audience hears and doesn't hear. And I said, I don't want the engineer to remove this word. Bill and I are going to use it like 27,000 times in our segment, and we don't want it edited out. First of all, we couldn't even do the segment if you're going to edit it out. It'd be nothing but a series of beeps. And secondly, we're not using it in its originally used derogatory sense. We're not saying anybody is a nigger. We're not calling anybody that. We are evaluating the use of the word. Okay, and to his credit, but this goes to how people parse these things. To his credit, he said, as long as you're not using it to demean somebody and you're using it more in an intellectual examination, go ahead and use it, and I'll tell the engineer not to beep it out.
There you go.
So, but, you know, I talked about profanity. Like I said, the F asterisk asterisk K. What is that about?
I like funk. That is a great musical genre from the late 70s, right, and early 80s.
But why would somebody do that? when everybody knows exactly what they're saying.
G-D instead of spelling out God. It's like, you know somebody's going to say something. It's like, I just want to do this so I can have the opportunity to expound upon it and post more instead of just putting an O instead of the dash. You know, and there's people that'll do that. There's people that will purposely make something that's overly PC so that they can explain it later. Look at me.
Oh, my Lord.
Look at me. And that's the sort of thing
that
I just want to slap their face. I just want to slap somebody's face. People will do things
to
get more
attention.
Exactly what they're
wow.
doing. Do it for effect. And again, the whole concentrating on the words and not the message. You might remember a year and a half or so ago, Cliven Bundy at the Bundy Ranch. And he stood up and using language that was actually acceptable in the 70s and even the first part of the 80s where he said, the Negro is essentially on Uncle Sam's plantation with all the welfare and all the freebies that they're getting. Mm-hmm. And they're told just to stay there on Uncle Sam's plantation and only come out to vote. And that's the problem that is in the whole Negro society. So he's saying Negro and saying Uncle Sam's plantation. He was absolutely lambasted. Not, let's take the message and let's evaluate the message. Is what he's saying truthful? Is it off base? Does it hold any water? In my opinion, it holds a lot of water. But because of the words he chose to deliver that message, he was absolutely lambasted from one end of the media to the other by these liberal PC nut jobs that it was aimed at. It's you're part of the problem, so you just want to take all of the focus off of the problem by slamming the source, not the message.
And I always try and take into account if I'm listening to somebody who's in their 70s or their 80s, that their style of speech, what they were brought up to feel is acceptable, may be different than what I was brought up to feel is acceptable.
You've read the Federalist Papers.
Yes.
I couldn't imagine speaking the way that they wrote.
Right.
It's difficult to read the Federalist Papers.
Yeah. Sort of as an amusing side note, I forget whether it was Holiday Inn or White Christmas, one of those two movies, which was done in, I think, the 40s, the early 40s during World War II. And there's actually a musical scene where they come out in blackface, okay, and they actually have real black children singing, and they're singing about, and the first time I watched it, I don't know, must have been like, I'm going to guess like around the 80s. No, it must have been the 90s. And they're singing about Abraham Lincoln freed the darkies. These are black people singing these words. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, but that illustrates how things change over time.
They do.
You know, there was a time when they were able to launch a movie to the entire nation that referred to black people as the darkies.
Watch Archie Bunker.
Right. Then Cliven Bundy's era, the Negro.
Mm-hmm.
My era, hey, dude, black, right?
Right.
Then came after that whole ridiculous, and we must refer to them as African Americans, okay? Which I absolutely refuse to do. That's as politically PC as anything else.
Right? Do you recall the reporter that was in England talking about a British guy? I'm sorry, he was an American reporter talking about a black man who lived in England and called him an African American. And so he said, but he's actually British, so, and then the guy had to, like folly. Because he's black, he's African-American, even though he lives in England.
Yeah, yeah. So he's never been to America, right? Yeah. But, yeah. The funny thing is, my black friends, they refer to their friends as black. They don't call them African-American. Yeah. So the whole thing's
ridiculous.
Just political nonsense.
All right. We'll be back with some less than unarticulate nonsense, if that makes any sense, right after this. Welcome back. We're now into segment 4, where we talk about things that you email into us. And I got to say, we love getting emails from everybody. If you haven't emailed us before, email us now. DaveandBillShow@gmail.com. That's the email address to send us your suggestions on things for us to talk about, as long as it fits within the show. And you can also go online and you can see all of our shows, watch them, listen to them, read up about them, whatever you like, at totallyunprepared.info. Everything's right there.
Okay. I want to acknowledge a buddy who lives in California. A couple of times on the show I've talked about going and adopting a rescue pet. And Jeremy Mesa good job. He actually, now he lives in California, so he couldn't go to Westar, which is the one that I was talking about here. But nevertheless, he heard the message. If you're going to get a dog, get it from a rescue. And so he got a rescue dog, and he puts videos up, and he's been training the dog, and the dog is awesome. Jeremy's doing an awesome job with it. And this dog now, instead of sitting in a rescue, has a home and a family. And Jeremy, good job. Good training, by the way. The dog is phenomenally smart. And again, if you live in Pahrump, Westar is the place you want to go. It's out on the very Manse.
Very end of Manse.
Very end. So if you go from 160 and you're heading towards the direction the sun sets, the very, when it dead ends, the property on your right is Westar. Cats, dogs, in abundance, anything you want.
Kangaroos, wallabies. Oh, yeah.
Terry, it's no kill. I mean, if they're there, Terry's feeding them and caring for them, medical fee, bills, everything. If you want to donate food, you want to donate money, you want to take a cat or a dog off his hands, Westar is doing, you know, as they say, God's good work. And so if you can patronize them, please do.
My oldest dog, who's 6 years old, mm-hmm. we got from Westar. I'm sorry, she's 12 years old. We got from Westar when she was six. Had her for 6 years now. All three of my dogs are rescue dogs, all from different places. And, you know, one thing I've learned...
And Cassie's a sweetheart.
Yeah, yeah, the older one. Yeah, 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 she is.
One thing I've learned, pitbull sweetheart, I should say.
One thing that I've learned about dogs that come from rescue shelters, it seems as though they're kind of humbled and much more appreciative.
Yes, yes.
Seems. Because yeah. It's almost like they've been locked up, and they don't want to be locked up.
Don't send me back to doggy jail.
Yeah, it's not like the other dogs taught them how to be worse dogs.
Yeah.
You know, like we get in the prison system. But I wanted to mention that the city of Los Angeles, now, at night when the sun goes down, we can pick up KNX 1070 AM. It's a 100,000-watt AM news station. And I enjoy listening to KNX 1070 out of L.A., at night, when I can pick it up. As a matter of fact, when I worked outside of Salt Lake City in the dark, I could pick up KNX the way from L.A. But I was listening last night, and I guess that the city council is looking at expanding. In the city right now, you're allowed a maximum of 3 cats.
Right.
They're looking at expanding that to 5 for cat lovers to ease the burden on shelters.
And, I don't know if you heard this part, either they're about to pass the law or they did pass the law that if you live within, I think it's the county of Los Angeles now, you have to microchip your cat. Cats? Really?
Really.
Absolutely inane.
I'd rather use that money to spay or neuter them.
Yep.
If it's a problem.
I got to tell you a quick rescue story. The second dog we got, whose name is Riley, you know Riley, big, white, giant.
Fluff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's probably, you know, 85 pounds. And so he was, when he was at the rescue, I saw him when he was there like 2-3 days, right? And he was freaked out. And he'd been with one owner since he was a puppy and had not been well socialized. And so I went into the pen where they had him, which was probably 20 by 10. And I got a steel folding chair and I sat there. And he would lay down like, you know, 7 feet away. And I'd wait 5 minutes and I'd pick up my chair and I'd move over. I'd wait for 5 minutes, I'd pick up my chair and move over. And it took me, I don't know how long, 45 minutes to get over close enough where I could lean down and pet him. But when I tried to approach him in any method but that, he would run away.
Mm-hmm.
And of course now, what is he? He's a gigantic love bug. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you just need to do that sometimes.
Yeah. That's what happens when you get a dog from the rescue.
There was something that came in through the email that kind of scared you and I both about something the federal government's doing with reclassification of conservative-minded people into domestic terrorists because of our political beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep in mind, virtually everything that is part of the major liberal agenda has failed over time. Whether they've done it here, done it elsewhere, or where, it just seems to be nothing but failures. The conservative agenda, when it's not liberal-based, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, when they're moving too far, seem to have more success. But now we have this incredibly liberal administration that's in, and they are trickling down. Anybody who's like you or I, we are enemies of the state.
Oh, yeah. when you talk about the liberal agenda, a quick aside before we get into the heart of this story. I've got a gentleman on who's a Facebook friend, and he's constantly querying me about, well, what's wrong with socialism? Socialism is great. Socialism works. And I pointed out to him why it doesn't. So he sends me a meme, okay? Denmark and all these supposed wonderful things about the economy of Denmark. And it says socialism. It's something like, why do those on the right criticize when it works so well? Or something like that, right? So I'm reading this thing, and it seems like heaven, if you believe it. And it took me 10 seconds to Google Denmark economics.
And it blow it out of the water.
Took me another 3 or 4 minutes to actually read the key points, right? All of the representations made on that meme were false.
Absolutely false.
Yeah.
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 When you said Denmark, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm familiar with the way that these things are working in that country for whatever reason. This has got to be BS.
It was. So, complete absurdity. But they circulate that amongst themselves. It's like a circle jerk with worse ramifications. But anyway, back to the thing we're talking about. This first got on the radar as far as, like, what is the government doing when the MIAC report was issued in Michigan? Now, mm-hmm. I forget what MIAC actually, the acronym stands for. But basically, this was a report put out by Department of Homeland Security, most specifically the Michigan Department of Homeland Security, which, of course, all of those state Department of Homeland Security are like division of U.S. Department of Homeland Security. So they put out this report where they were talking about domestic extremists, domestic terrorists. And the description would be people like you and I, people who believe in a limited government, strict interpretation of the Constitution, that believe in the right to keep and bear arms. I mean, you read what was in this MIAC report. You got to be kidding me. These are domestic terrorists. This is probably 49% of the American population.
You and I were both doing radio, nationally syndicated radio at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I called Department of Homeland Security. And I said, look, I'm familiar with this report, and I just want to let you know, by all accounts of everything that you put on there, to my chagrin, I guess I would be classified as a domestic terrorist. I'm wondering if there's somebody I can speak to make sure that I'm officially on the list, because I believe all of these things that you believe to be a threat. And I was transferred to a voicemail.
I
never got a call back, but I did that on the air.
Yeah, sounds like government when they don't have an answer and big corporations when they don't have an answer. Well, it went to the next level because the MIAC report was just that, a report. Okay, but just last week, the United States Department of Justice announced, and it's being mischaracterized, unfortunately, by a lot of the people on the right who are concerned, that they've created a department to deal with domestic terrorism, and they haven't. They have appointed what they call a domestic extremist counsel. So they've got like an attorney who's assigned to those kinds of cases and those issues. Now the problem, of course, and this is where perhaps the people who are mischaracterizing it aren't so off base, is normally what happens, that attorney says my work case is too high, and then they give him assistance, other attorneys, and pretty soon you've got, you know, a pyramid structure, which becomes basically, I mean, that's how the Internal Revenue Service started. It was the Bureau of Internal Revenue within the Department of Treasury. And then when it got so large, they said, okay, well, now we're going to make you the Internal Revenue Service and break you off. And so that's how these things start. So I certainly understand what people are saying. And again, when the government, one of the characterizations made by the media, not by DOJ, is that this domestic extremist council is going to start relying on information provided by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
The worst joke,
yes,
for any sort of rationale or sensibility, it'd be like the Northern Wealthy Law Club.
Basically,
it would be their counterpart.
Here's how I define the Southern Poverty Law Center. If you are not a socialist and you are aggressive in either your words or your language,
you're on their list.
That's it. That's it.
And you and I personally know some people who have been on that list.
Yes, and I personally am offended that I'm not on it. I mean, it's like, hey, Southern Poverty Law Center, get it together.
Maybe they'll see your truck rant and throw you right on there.
There you go. That's probably it. But the idea that anybody, no less people in government, by the way, virtually, Southern Poverty Law Center makes money from sharing their views on who are domestic terrorists or potential domestic terrorists with law enforcement all over the country. I saw some figure that they make, I don't know, something like $12 million a year providing their consultations. And it's nonsense. It's absolute bunk.
There's actually people that would be in Congress that would be considered domestic terrorists.
Ron Paul would have been a perfect example.
Based on the constituents that put them in office.
Yeah.
So it's a whole bunch of hooey. But when we start having our own government supposed to be of the people, by the people, for the people, now redefining the people because they are almighty. Well, the ship has listed so far, I believe that we're actually capsized at this point.
And my major concern, it dovetails exactly with what you were saying, is when the government starts looking at your political views or my political views, which is the having political views and being able to expound on them, no matter how much somebody else may be butthurt, okay, is what all free countries, a trait shared by all free countries where men look in the mirror and say, I'm a free man, is the ability to hold political views and to express them. Now, when the government comes along and says, yes, but if you express this one and this one and this one and this one, now you're on a list.
Yeah, look at this. Lenin and Stalin, Mao, Hitler,
right?
Mussolini, they all did this. Yeah. Castro, they all did this.
You know what this is? This is the leftist version of McCarthyism.
You're right. But McCarthy was right, and that was proven.
Nevertheless, though, he went after people with a particular political slant.
Yep.
And now the left is just doing it in reverse.
They are. We'll be back next week.
Take care.